Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 14th, 2015, which just happens to be my lovely wife's birthday. So, happy birthday, Pamela. Anyway, today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, the climate maven, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing? And wish your wife happy birthday as well.
I will indeed. So, DR, we have in past shows over the last few months talked at some length about what's called net metering caps here in the state of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Net metering caps have to do with solar power. Well, they have to do with renewable energy, but in particular, a lot of times they have to do with solar power. Mm-hmm. And a net metering cap, or net metering, just in all by itself, is this idea that if I, as a homeowner or as a business owner, put solar panels on the roof of my building, I can connect those to the electrical system, and when the solar panels are making electricity that I, in my home, when I'm not using it, that electricity gets to flow back onto the grid and get used by someone else, and my meter on my house or on my business, that meter that's on the electrical meter you see outside your house, that runs backwards. So at the end of the month, I pay the net of the electricity I consumed and the electricity I produced because they have solar panels on my roof. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that that's a very good way of encouraging people to buy solar panels and businesses in particular to buy solar panels because you can make a little money at it. The Massachusetts legislature, in its wisdom, put a cap, that is to say, a maximum amount of dollars that I guess the utilities have to pay out for this program, right? Mm-hmm. So that people getting paid for that electricity, that money comes from somewhere, and the state legislature put a cap on it. This is now years past. Mm-hmm. In the last year or so, it's my understanding that there has been a quite dramatic, it's actually the last several years, but a quite dramatic increase in the amount of solar power installations here in the state. Have you heard that?
Yes, definitely. It's been booming as of late, but unfortunately, it's sort of run into cap issues, and obviously there's been some efforts in the legislature to try to remedy that problem.
So have you seen and I'll ask our listeners, have you seen those trucks going up and down the highway? I won't mention any names, but you see businesses, local businesses that have started up to put solar installations in place because there's this opportunity, and that creates jobs, right? Which is the whole crux of the issue.
Exactly. You just see solar all over the city, so to speak.
There's that. One of the other reasons that solar energy, at least in Massachusetts, has been growing dramatically, is because of things like what's called community shared solar. I think community solar. Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about that? Can you tell me what it is?
Yes, it's definitely one of the more innovative plans to sort of try to get solar energy more popular, and it's sort of a solar farm or solar garden where there's a lot of investment and a lot of tech and a lot of credits in terms of boosting solar in a specific region.
But people can get together, say in a neighborhood, and say, hey, I don't have any sunshine on my house because there's too many trees. Let's go put up some solar panels in that field over there, and mm-hmm. we'll all kind of be shareholders. And
exactly.
you get the credit for the electricity that is being produced at that site, typically in your neighborhood. So mm-hmm. what it does is it takes away the idea that you have to have a sunny roof because you can go find a sunny spot in your community.
Exactly.
And what I'm particularly intrigued is the idea that this at least offers the possibility that people who don't own their homes can buy clean power, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and I guess there was a podcast I listened to somewhere a couple of years ago by the guy who, one of the speaker was the guy who started Solar Edison out on the West Coast. I forget his name. Jig something. Anyway, doesn't matter. But he was making a very interesting point. He was saying that you can have technical innovations. That is to say, you can make new solar panels, and they're cool, and they're more and more efficient, and they get smaller, and they're beautiful, and all this stuff. But those technical advances have to be accompanied by business innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have to have new business ideas, new ways of using these things, because they don't fit into the old business models. And
exactly.
So these kinds of net metering things and the community shared solar are... and, of course, you, as you know, you can lease solar panels to put on your roof. You can buy them. And there's all these things. There's this innovation in business models is at least as important as the technical innovation in making new solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, I mean, that's kind of a backdrop. So we have a booming solar industry here in Massachusetts. It's going great guns. You can see it. There are jobs being made. It is subsidized, but it's a good thing because it makes that subsidization, I guess you'd say, makes Massachusetts a leader in this area. And so with all that kind of as backdrop, now we tiptoe up to the big problem we've been having lately, right? So
exactly.
Tell me, what is? Can you describe what the big, the elephant in the room is as far as the solar industry in Massachusetts and this net metering concept?
Well, it's been noted, I think the Springfield Republican noted that, you know, once you hit that cap, it becomes a sort of choke, or if you will, a chokehold on the solar industry.
And that's because it's because an individual company that wants to put solar panels on their roof does the calculation of can they make money, you know, can mm-hmm. they make, and important in that calculation is the ability to get this net metering money.
Exactly.
And if the state has capped that and that money is no longer available, then the solar panel financially falls apart mm-hmm. and they don't do it, right? So that's the chokehold you're describing.
Exactly. And a lot of utilities that are, so shall we say, not terribly thrilled about the solar boom, they often argue in favor of not lifting the cap and basically make all these sort of nonsensical and specious arguments about the alleged economic harm that will be caused if the net metering cap is raised.
And I think that argument is an important one to hear. Is I think the utilities say that the people with the, well, mostly we're talking about companies, right? Big box stores. Mm. If you have that on the roof, you get money, the retail value of the electricity, but you do not pay for the infrastructure that is providing the electricity to everyone else. And so that's an unfair payment to you, right? That you should be somehow taxed for the infrastructure that delivers the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so and is that a valid argument? I don't know. I mean, I think you can make it, but it's not clear to me. And even if it is a legitimate argument, what we're doing is supporting an industry, right?
Exactly.
We're trying to grow an industry here.
Mm-hmm. And an industry that needs to grow in the face of a climate crisis that, you know, you have to have as much clean energy as possible. So it makes total sense to try to nurture that industry as best as possible.
Well, and I guess the other thing I was going to say was sort of all over the lot here, but it's an interesting question of why utility companies would not be crazy about net metering caps. I mean, why does National Grid not support this? And I think it's because, and this goes back to articles that Dave Roberts put up a few years ago, is that the business model of utilities, electrical utilities, is a government-granted monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an appropriate business model in 1910 mm-hmm. when it was craziness to have multiple companies putting up electric power lines, right? It was just too much. It was wasteful. So the mm-hmm. a monopoly was granted in order to electrify the country, right? And so you ended up in the 1930s with the Tennessee Valley Authority. But nowadays, we're well past that. You know, we've got an infrastructure, but the utilities still have this monopoly. And I think that when there's electric, people are generating electric power on their roofs, it's a threat to the business model of the utility, right?
Exactly.
That's why they're worried.
Exactly. It's very similar to the nervousness that the fossil fuel industry itself feels about solar and wind and other forms of quote unquote disruptive technology, that they're so used to having it their way that they don't like it when a newer and better technology comes along and sort of upsets the apple cart, so to speak.
It's in a way, it's similar to cell phones, which is sort of an old analogy. But the reason everyone in China has a cell phone is because they didn't have the copper wires that the United States has, and mm-hmm. it was just they could leapfrog to the cell technology. Same thing with solar power; you don't need a big infrastructure, and so that's great. But here in the United States, as more and more people are making their own power, they don't need the utility. The utility slowly goes into a death spiral. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's all over the lot. So we've got you, I asked you to talk about the problem with the net metering cap, and you said that it was choking companies from making new installations, right?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely put a crimp into you know the solar industry, and there have been efforts in the legislature to try to remedy that. Particularly one late last month, there was a bill that an amendment that passed in the Massachusetts Senate to lift a cap on solar net metering, and now we have a word of another such
<Okay. laughs>
a bit of legislation to in its own way lift solar metering restrictions in the state.
The Baker administration is proposing something, right?
Yes, that's correct. There was a report. This comes from the Fall River Herald News that on August the 7th, the Baker administration filed legislation to nurture the growth of the solar power industry in Massachusetts. According to the Baker administration, the bill will help the state meet, quote, well ahead of schedule its goal of 1,600 megawatts of solar power by 2020. It will raise private and public caps 2% each, which the officials in the Baker administration say will represent a 50% increase in the amount of solar energy available for net metering credits and a 40% increase for private entities. So it's being promoted, at least by the Baker people, as a benefit, but there is some dispute as to how beneficial it will be.
And so I just realized that's a very important what you just said has some important information in it. So according to the Global Warming Solutions Act, we have targets for carbon emissions. The Patrick administration set a target for the installation of solar power because in the first few years of this solar program, they exceeded the amount of solar power that they anticipated putting in. They did much better, so they set a very aggressive cap of 1,600 megawatts of solar power by 20 something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you just said is that the Baker administration has provided enough net metering caps to reach that target. Right, that's what they're claiming. They say, oh yes, we're going to get to that 1,600 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, so what's the flaw in that formula, DR? You've looked at the bill closely. If you don't get it right, I'll tell you what I'm thinking.
Well, part of the criticism, probably the most precise criticism, was made from what I noticed was from Ben Hellerstein of the group Environment Massachusetts, who noted, quote, the governor's legislation could actually slow the growth of solar because for many types of solar projects, the bill would deny fair compensation for the energy produced, and any compensation system for solar power should take into account all the benefits solar provides, and it should also preserve programs like virtual net metering that make the benefits of solar available to all.
Mm-hmm.
So and Hellerstein is not the only person to note that there are elements of this bill that may make it that the destroyer disguised a savior for the solar industry in Massachusetts. In fact, Adam Wade for the website lawandenvironment.com notes that, quote, the bill would increase the metering cap, but would substantially reduce the calculation of net metering credits, and in some instances, the value of net metering credits could potentially be more than halved. So, unquote.
What I was going at is that I think the Baker administration wants to satisfy the 1,600 megawatt goal, but mm-hmm. then try to strangle the baby in the bathtub, right? And that after 1600 megawatts, they don't want any more, they don't want to support it anymore. Whereas from a climate perspective, 1600 megawatts of installed solar power is just the first step.
Exactly.
You know, now we got to set a much higher one and go after that one. And
I guess
it's that lack of
enthusiasm
that is upsetting in this bill, right?
Exactly. And it sort of goes to the point that, you know, for a state that should be the national leader in clean energy, you have leadership that seems to be less than fully committed to maximizing the potential of clean energy, that seems to want to take a half measure. And, you know, in the face of a climate crisis, in the face of the need to make sure that this state leads the nation in terms of clean energy, this is no time for half measures.
I agree. So let me just, we're running out of time. Let me just sum up what I sort of editorialize about what I think about this bill. Number one is that climate hawks in Massachusetts should be very proud of themselves, because the solar lobbying day that we reported on a few weeks ago, people calling up their representatives, putting pressure on the governor, got some action, right? The governor heard, and the governor is now proposing a bill to do something about these net metering caps. So that's a good thing. I guess the flip side is the question of whether or not the bill is as good as it could be, right? Mm-hmm. And without, you know, casting aspersions on anyone's intentions, that we, I think it's fair to say that most climate hawks think the bill could be a heck of a lot better, and continue the aggressive support of the solar industry past this 1600 megawatts. Because I mean, the 1600 megawatt number would, I mean, all by next October we will have met that target, right? So it's a very small, and basically kills the solar, doesn't kill it, but it hurts the solar industry almost immediately in 2015. So climate hawks should be proud, but I think right now we've got a bill in the legislature that needs to be improved, so we have to redouble our efforts to talk to our representatives and tell them to make this an aggressive, highly supportive bill, and to take out these provisions that would do damage to the solar industry down the line, right?
In fact, as Adam Wade notes, quote, when the legislature returns to session this fall, the Joint Committee on Telecommunications, Utility, and Energy will have substantial work to do to reconcile the rival bills, referring to the bill that passed the Senate and is now under consideration in the House, and also Governor Baker's bill, because obviously, you know, this is something where, as I said before, you can't take half measures. And even though, you know, public pressure got us to this point, more public pressure has to get us to the point where we absolutely have the best bill implemented, that, you know, we have to have something that sort of gets the full ray of sunshine, so to speak, when it comes to the solar industry.
I'm with you. So we got to leave it there, DR. Let me tell all the listeners, there has been a change. Usually at this point in the podcast, I rattle off all the ways that you can listen to the Climate Minute. But it turns out that Massachusetts Climate Action Network has recently changed its website. We have a brand spanking new website. It's shiny and beautiful. You can check it out. It's massclimateaction.org. And that now is where the podcast resides. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the blog on the, of course, if you need to, just Google Massachusetts Climate Action Network. You'll find us on the blog, on the website is where the blog is, and that's where you can find the main repository. I think it's what's called the landing page. Of course, you can send us comments there. We'd love to hear from you. You can also listen to us. You can find us on Facebook. That stays the same. That's Facebook/ Mass Climate Action. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. We're all over the place. One climate action you can take every week is to recommend this show to someone else who might be interested, because it's by word of mouth that we build our network. Right, DR?
Absolutely.
So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. And goodbye. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.